Welcome, everyone, to Awakening, Talks with Compelling People. I'm Connie Shaw, and tonight's guest is Suzanne Shaw of Danville, Indiana, whose story will have you on the edge of your seat. Suzanne is an intuitive life coach who's been working with Mother Mary and Ascended Masters for decades. She's an only child who has led a somewhat low-key, secret life in her spiritual relationships with the angelic realm out of necessity. Find out about that as our show develops. And now, Suzanne Shaw. Welcome to the show tonight, Suzanne.
Hi, Connie. It's good to be on the phone with you tonight.
Thank you very much. The topic of our show tonight is working with Mary and the angels. First of all, Suzanne, I'd like to ask a question I'm sure everyone is wondering. Are you a channel for Mary, or is that an incorrect concept? And if it's incorrect, please tell us how you see or hear Mary and the Ascended Masters and the angelic realm.
No, I'm not a channel. I've never considered myself a channel.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a child, and Mary and the different beings began appearing to me, I would see them physically. I would feel their presence. I would hear them.
Yes.
And then as I continued to get older and, you know, grow and mature into adulthood, nothing changed. It didn't go away. And so when I am working with people, or I'm sitting at home and I'm meditating, basically they show up. They may show up in the room. They may show up out in the yard. I hear them, I feel them, and I know who they are by working with them for so many years. They get my attention by sound of their voice or just even feeling of their energy, and I know then to go into my inner space and listen to what they have to say. When I'm working with people, they will frequently open up a space in front of me. It's like having a book drop down or a TV screen open up right in front of you, and they sort of like writing appears where I can see what they have to say, and sometimes I will see it and hear it at the same time. And sometimes it goes into just instantaneous knowingness.
I was going to say
the other piece is that for when I was became an adult, I worked with a woman by the name of Consuela Newton and a process called integrated awareness, which integrates the right and left hemispheres of the brain.
Yes.
So many times when I work with people, I'm also using the integrated awareness technique to create a soul-to-soul connection with them. But at no time have I ever thought that something was entering my body and I was channeling.
I understand. Well, I forgot to mention, Suzanne, that you also have a master's degree and further that you're a medical intuitive. And that brings me to the question about how old you were when your relationship with Mary and other beings from the other side developed. Were you a small child? And if so, what precipitated it?
I don't really know what precipitated it. For, you know, it's kind of odd in one way. I'm not Catholic. I didn't grow up Catholic. I grew up Protestant in a small town in the Midwest in a very conservative community. And I wasn't exposed in the church. We went to church on a regular basis. It was a Presbyterian church in town. And went to church on a regular basis with the family. But in most of the Protestant churches, Mary is not a prominent figure. She's the mother of Jesus, end of story. And so the only time you really see pictures of her, for the most part, are Christmas time.
Yes.
And during the holidays, you know, and maybe around Easter.
Yes.
Those two times of year, and the rest of it is she's a non-entity for the most
right.
part.
Right.
So not being Catholic, having, of course, I knew from pictures what she looked like, having her appear was strange and wonderful and seemed quite normal at the time, and it was approximately right before my fifth birthday. I can't give the exact month. I want to say September and October. My birthday is in November, so it was mm-hmm. around September, October, beginning of school time frame, kindergarten for me. aside from that, Mary showing up, before Mary had been, you know, appeared, I had other beings that were showing up, and I was also having deceased members of the family show up.
Oh, for example, like whom?
Now, well, I had my grandmother, we called her Gusty, my grandmother Gusty, my mom's mother, had an old dresser, and on the bottom drawer, there were all these pictures. Now, I was not allowed to get in that drawer. It was the magic drawer for me, and I always wanted to get in there, but when I was really little, I would pull up the pictures and tear them up. And so I wasn't allowed to touch them until I was around 4. So I know it was sometime between 4 and 5 that I was allowed to go through that drawer. And I was upstairs in the upper Victorian bedroom pulling out this drawer and looking through the pictures. And I ran downstairs with a picture, and I was so shocked because I had in my hand a picture of a man in a suit. And he looked like it was time frame was probably about 1900, 1905, just by the look of the picture and the kind of suit he had on.
Yes.
And I was very familiar with him, and I went downstairs. My grandmother was sitting in the living room, and I showed her this picture, and I said, "This is the man who comes to visit me." And this was the man that had been showing up whenever I was sick, and I was sick a lot as a child, by the way. Mm-hmm. So whenever I was sick, I had a lot of upper respiratory infections, ear infections, digestive problems. And so I was seriously ill from time to time in the hospital. So, and I had this man showing up in a suit. And the picture was, he was probably about 50 years of age in the picture. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother calmly looked at the picture when I came in saying, "This is a man who comes to see me." And everybody had heard, by the way, about the man that would come to see me, and they would nod their head and just go, mm-hmm, and not say anything. No one said, "You didn't see him." They would just nod their head and not say anything, basically, other than just silence. Mm-hmm. And so when I showed him the picture, my grandmother the picture, and there was no one else in the room, she said, "Oh, that is your grandfather. That's your mom's dad." And my grandfather had passed away when he was around 60 to 65, and my mother was 5 years of age. And she was, my mom was the youngest of 9. She was the afterthought baby, the surprise. And so he had been gone for all these years, and my grandmother was not shocked. She was very calm about it. And she just said, "That is your grandfather." And she asked me if I was afraid, and I said no. And I was confused because I couldn't figure out when she told me that he was no longer alive and it was my grandfather. And I actually knew that, you know, I didn't have a grandfather from my mom's side of the family. And so I was really surprised because I didn't get, I had a lot of other deceased family members, as I was to find out later on, that were coming to see me. He was not the only one. I had great grandparents and great aunts and uncles. And actually some people that grew up in the community because the family basically came into Indiana in, like, I don't know, 1810 or 1805 or something like that. So there were a lot of generations living in this community of Danville, Indiana, that were, you know, just going from generation to generation. And so I had other people in the community that were showing up that were long gone, long, you know, long before my mom and probably my grandmother was alive and had been born yet. And so they were showing up, and I didn't know what dead was. I mean, people would talk about somebody dying in the family, even when I was, we had a lot of loss of life when I was throughout my childhood. So there were a lot, I did know that people were there and then they were gone. But it was very confusing for me because so often after they were gone, they would show up and they would show up
to
solid people. Yeah, they talked to me. I could hear them.
And what would they say?
They'd ask me how I was. I'd always feel tremendous amount of love from them. As an adult looking back, do I think any of them were trapped, like trapped souls, you know, ghosts? No, they weren't. They were just coming in and I could see them. I was on the frequency where I could see them, and you know, they weren't all battered and they weren't all moldy or anything like that. They just looked like normal people, and I just would, and children would show up and I would play with them, and I didn't know that they were not here. I knew that they were different. I learned early on that other people couldn't see them. I figured that one out, and so I learned not to say anything about it. And a lot of times they told me when somebody else was going. To this day, other family members show up, or sometimes neighbors or close friends of the family will show up and say, so-and-so is leaving, and they will be gone in 6 months, or they will be gone in 3 years, or and they will let me know whether it's the neighbors leaving or somebody in the family's leaving. It's not only just about my family. It's people I know and have contact with.
Mm-hmm. So since you were an only child, without siblings, you nevertheless had a world that was peopled with relatives who loved you, who were on the other side, and not only did they inquire about you and let you know that they loved you, but they also have served the very wonderful function of warning you of imminent departures, which reminds me to ask you about your life after the age of five. I understand that your childhood was comprised of many traumas, shocks, tragedies, losses, and upheavals, and yet still you never lost your faith, and in fact, you deepened your relationships with Mary when she finally began to appear, and the masters and the angels. In fact, you weren't destined in your early life to marry and have children, but your work has been in a far greater arena, although it was largely incognito and very low-key. So what I'd like to ask you, Suzanne, is how did it dawn on you that you were meant for a mission that was to be very unconventional and far-reaching, and about what age were you when Mary and masters and angels began to appear, and then how did that develop?
Well, it actually started, again, at that 4 to 5 span of time, when I was someplace between 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen beings of light and some of the angels that I later on realized that they were angels.
Mm-hmm.
That were showing up, and other masters. There were Hindu deities that were showing up around the age of, I'm guessing, 3 to 4. But right before my 5th birthday, I had a lot of tragedy around that time and some major trauma, some attack that happened at that period of time in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And that is when they appeared in force.
Oh.
And I did not tell anyone that what had happened to me. And I kept it a secret. I knew that, I was a very intuitive child. I knew that this was not something I was ever going to be able to tell. And I kept it a secret up until actually just a few years ago. I didn't reveal it to anyone. And yet I didn't repress any of the memories. I just didn't talk about it.
Yes.
And that's when Mary and Jesus and angelic beings and beings of light and other masters that work with planet Earth started showing up. And they would show up in form. And sometimes it would just be like a ball. They'd show up as a ball in the room and then materialize out of this ball of light. Sometimes I would just turn around and there they were sitting on the bed.
Yes.
As I got older, and there were periods of time when there would be so many coming and going, and the only time that I would be afraid was when they would show up in the evening, like right after I would go to bed, and they'd show up in the evening, and I was surprised. You know, it was a scary thing. And I remember one time when I was really young, probably about 7, I was really upset, concerned, and I told my mother, I said, there's someone in the room and they keep coming and they're nice people and they love me and I'm really afraid. And my mom just calmly, I don't think she believed anything was really there, but mm-hmm. she calmly said, just tell them to let them, they need to let you know when they're going to show up.
Oh,
so they have to let you know ahead of time that they're going to show up and then you won't be afraid. And I walked back in the room and I told them, you know, don't surprise me. And so at that point in time, they started, they literally started giving me signs, whether it was, a floral scent, flowers hanging in the air. Because for whatever reason, if flowers started hanging in the middle of the air, just a rose or, a bouquet of flowers, that didn't scare me for whatever reason. It was
you
just
could see that.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. They would just show the bouquet of flowers. That would be fine,
and
it wouldn't scare me. It was only when they would show up in form. A ball of light didn't scare me. It was only when they showed up the form and I didn't have something that there was going to be a form that showed up.
Absolutely,
And so they began, and in the beginning, early on, it was all about, and I had so much trauma and so much loss, it was about you're loved, it's all okay, there's a purpose behind this. And they would say it in a language that I could understand, and it was not only hearing it, but feeling it, and it was as if I was being downloaded, what I would call downloaded as an adult, with this energy or awareness or presence and understanding. And it was the level I could understand. And they pretty much said, this is for a purpose. This is for a reason. You're loved. You're not alone. We'll always be with you. And they would start showing me things and talking to me about other realms, and it was like a class within a class. Part of times it was kind of what I call like science. Sometimes it was more spiritual kind of things. Though spiritual and science, they all merged together as I reached adulthood. But it seemed to me at part of times, okay, this is math, this is geometry, this is some other language, this is, and I put it into little pockets.
Like, you know, instructional packets.
Yeah, instructional packets in my mind. And I didn't see it as a child. I didn't see a connection to it. And they would, what seemed to be very simple was actually, was not so simple. It was actually advanced kind of information that I figured out as an adult that it was what they were doing, where they started me out very young. So it wasn't just about saying, you're going to be okay and we're with you. It was also about instruction. So, and they just continued, and the older I got, the more they showed up. And I didn't know what to do with the information for many, many years.
Did they ever give you any visions or prophecies about coming times, especially this period that we're in now?
They did. The first time I had, it was... I remember reading, and I want to say I was around 12, and I had just finished reading Rachel Carson's The Silent Spring.
Oh, yes.
And it wasn't just reading the book. I read the book, and I was obsessed with the environment and what was going on the planet. It was like my heart was connected with Mother Earth and the animals and the people. And from the small town, I was, what can I do? What's being done? How can we fix things? And that was my catalyst. And it was around that time when Mary and Jesus, and there were a couple of other beings that showed up, and in a graphic but simple, not so scary, were showing me, it was as if the things written in the Silent Spring were being expanded, as if my vision could see into the water, where they literally would touch my forehead, and I could see the damage that was back in the 60s, what was there at that present time. But then they progressed it, like I could literally go up to now, you know, and see the progression if we didn't do something. And they explained that just because the way human nature was, that some things would probably be fixed, some things would be ignored totally, and some things would be someplace in the middle where it would get worse but not catastrophic. Well, and just because of human nature, that we wouldn't necessarily listen to all of the warnings that were happening around with the, and I was shown species being eliminated. And you know, at that time I was 12 and from a small town, and though my parents were well read and we talked about a lot of subjects, dinner table was not idle conversation. It was a lot of very deep kind of conversations. And yet, this was coming from a different realm, a whole another level. But I remember them touching my forehead and then seeing into the water, seeing into multiple, you know, the animal kingdom, water, land, insect. It didn't matter what category we're in, the plants, the soil, the water, the drinking water, all of that. And it made sense because I had read The Silent Spring and then other books around that time frame. There wasn't a lot of information out there. And I was, I didn't know what to do. What it did was it put me into a place of what can I do, what can I do, what can I do? And their answer to it was pray. They and know that this is part of the process. It is part of the process. And things will get better. This is not the end of anything. And from it was odd because they showed going through it getting so bad, and then suddenly it was sort of like going through the four seasons and coming into the winter and then spring and then the summer, and they were showing like a cycle of regeneration and rebirth, and it was always as if I was on a circular spiral kind of viewing station where I was going, instead of an elevator going straight up and down, it was like an elevator that went in a spiral, and I was curving up in this kind of strange imagery that they would create where we would go through the different stages of basically where we are and were back then, and where we were going as we got to where we are right now, and then going into the basically breaking everything up, and then from that, the molecular structure was being recreated into a new format, into a new geometry, into a new mathematical construct with new images and colors and light. So you went through an icky kind of place where the buildings were all crumbled, and out of that you had something new that was so beyond what we have today, even today. And
that's very hopeful. Yeah. Well, Suzanne, we're just about out of time, and I have my eye on the clock. So let me just recap for a moment, if I might, and then ask you a few questions for wrap-up, if we could.
Uh-huh.
As I understand it, Mary's prophecies that she began to give you by showing you things at the age of 12 have now been fulfilled, and you have read a great deal and experienced a great deal in the meantime to understand that they were preparing you to understand how things would evolve in the animal, vegetable, mineral, and human kingdoms. And you now understand that we're in a very dark period in Earth's history, but this is not the end. We're going to go through difficult times, and certainly we have seen wars and crumbling buildings and great devastation to the water and the air and the land and various species on the planet. So I'd like to ask you now, Suzanne, what is it that you see that can give hope to people who are overwhelmed or angry or confused about these very challenging times? You had said that you always knew you were not alone. We're not alone. You felt the love of Jesus and Mary and the angels and that they have for us. What other things could you use or mention to comfort people at this time?
One of the things throughout the years that Mary always said repeatedly was have faith, you know, trust.
Right.
Know that you need to surrender and let go of the control.
All right.
Move into a place of self-love.
Yes.
Move into a place of forgiveness.
Yes.
Stay in a place of non-judgment. No matter what is going on around you, whatever is being done to you, what was done by a political time on the planet, a country, a people, move into non-judgment, whether it's in your family, whether it's judging yourself, move to the other place, because there's a reason for everything. There will be wisdom and understanding that will come out of that when you have time to step back and reflect. That said, always move into that place of the power of prayer, because prayer is a moving force. It is the force to be reckoned with.
And how can we use prayer then to protect our homes and communities? How can we use prayer in a practical way?
In a practical way,
for example, any way that we can?
I was going to say, from a practical way, you can call upon the angels, know they're real. Call upon Mary, call upon Jesus, call upon anyone you are called to inside your heart to bring forth and ask for help. In other words, don't do it alone, because you're not alone. You need to ask for help. That's one of the things we forget down here, ask for help. So in the prayer, ask for help. And know that even if you don't get your immediate whatever you're asking for, know that they're there. Their presence is real, because so many people don't have that ability to, or haven't been graced with the ability to see, feel, taste, smell, be in their presence in the way I have, because I'm very fortunate. At the same time, it doesn't matter, because they're still there. You ask, you pray, they're there. So call upon the angels, call upon Mary, call upon Jesus. Know that the power of prayer, you can surround your town, your family, your human body, your home, the whole country with light. You can put it in a bubble of light, an egg-shaped bubble of light, and surround it in there and know that that light act is real and it acts as a protective barrier.
That is extremely practical, and I thank you. Now, I'd just like to ask you a couple of more quick questions before we have to sign off, and if you could just answer these in a sentence or two each. How long do you imagine we'll be experiencing challenging times in our nation before we'll see actual peace in the world and a new golden age?
Well, I think from what I've been shown, and they showed me a lot in not only when I was a child, but in January of 1980, and that we've got definitely 2 or 3, 4 more years of really rough years. We've got a rough year, 2009, 2010, most likely 2011, 2012, really some dicey, rough times ahead. Some of it will come fast and furious. Expect the unexpected is what I've been shown. Know that, be prepared to let go, of whatever you thought your life was going to be. Let go of whether it's the home, the clothes, the whatever, and know that in the long run, everything will balance out. Everything will level out. This is a time that of great change.
Finally, Suzanne, in signing off now, one more question. What can we do in the meantime to stay upbeat, cheerful, productive, and healthy? And what parting wisdom do you have regarding the main points to remember about living a meaningful spiritual life in these times?
Well, one of the things is to remember from the time of your birth, we are all on a spiral journey towards the light. That spiritual enlightenment. That's why we're down here. And we are ascending towards the light. And you have to remember that. And everything that is going on right now, we are acquiring wisdom. And we move towards that light by acquiring wisdom. So we, even though in the darkest time, we're actually acquiring wisdom, and we are moving through all of this in light. And this is the time on the planet, and in your life, our life, my life, when we are emerging spiritually to a whole other plane of existence and moving into that light and bringing love. And it is the age of peace. We're right on the edge of the era of peace. And so it's like keeping that in mind while you're going through that and paying attention to every moment. It's, again, going back to that being in the now and being in the present moment, taking advantage of the good food, the good friendship, the good water we have to drink, the green grass, the blue skies, the snow, the ice, whatever it is, it's being taking in the magic of what the planet has to offer right here at this moment and being grateful that you have all the friendship and the family that you have around you and stay in the moment. And that is what is important. Ultimately, that is the bottom line of everything.
Oh, Suzanne Shaw, thank you so much. I can tell that you have a great deal more to share, and I'd like to ask you if you would be willing to do a part 2 interview on this very same topic.
I would love to.
All right, we'll do that soon. So, again, Suzanne Shaw, thank you so much for your intimate sharing with our listeners. That concludes our show, Awakening, Talks with Compelling People. You've been listening to our guest, Suzanne Shaw of Danville, Indiana, who is an extremely gifted intuitive life coach and Marian visionary. I'm your host, Connie Shaw. Thanks for spending time with us this evening, and be sure to schedule time to be with us next time. Remember, you have a unique set of skills, talents, and experience which other people need. Fulfill your life purpose by doing selfless service in your community today. Your love will help to soften suffering in someone's life. You are love itself. Share it and watch it multiply in your own life.